Good morning and welcome to Manzanita Voices, the program for people who love books and the written word. I'm so glad you joined us today. Hope you had a great week. We have an interesting show lined up, especially for parents who are going through the tragedy of divorce. And it is a tragedy, not only for parents, but especially the children. My guest, Derlina Nima, is a family counselor who has written on this topic, and she has counseled many adults and children who have been affected by divorce. She's here to shed some light on how you and your children can come through the process with less pain and more understanding. We'll be talking with Derlina in just a minute, but first I want to remind you to go to my website, manzamedia.com, and check the date book for interesting events that are coming up in your area. And if you have something that would interest writers that's going on, I don't care if you live in Arizona, New York State, Wisconsin, or California, wherever you are, let me know about your event, and I will put it on my website. I do have one little item to tell you about, and that is the a reading that's being put on by the Red Fox Underground and the El Dorado Arts Council in Placerville. It's going to be on Friday, March 23rd, and at 7 o'clock, and the Writers Circle members are going to be reading poetry, prose, and memoir. And that's happening at the Art Space, 459 Main Street, Placerville. So, it'll be on my website. Go and check that out. Look for other events, too. Now, while you're there on my website, would you please check my blog? Because I've try to update it every so often. I've got some items up there, including a work in progress from my historical novel that I'm writing. And now I'd like to get to Morning Workout, where I always read a poem or a short fiction or something that my listeners have sent in. This one is a poem by one of the Red Fox Underground. It's one of the women who you're going to be hearing at in Placerville if you go to that event. It's by Joanne Englin, and the title of her poem is By Nature. Yesterday's poem stung my instep as I walked barefoot in clover. It left a troubling itch. Last week's poem fell from the tree to land on my shoulder. I, like a fool, brushed it off. Once, sweeping a nest of poems, some stuck to each other. Some had dried out, withered. I let a poem take me home 3 years ago. I still feel its hands on my body, its warm, urgent breath in my ear. Thanks, Joanne, for your poem, By Nature. Hope you get a lot of people coming to your event in Placerville. The next one I'm going to read is by Charlotte Muse. Charlotte and her husband, Patrick, are going to be guests on my show sometime soon. And Charlotte has written a chapbook of poems that were inspired by a pretty marvelous woman. Her name was Ascension Solisano de Cervantes, and she was the last fluent native speaker of the Mutsun language. I hope I didn't murder the name of the tribe. These were the Native Americans who lived in the Bay Area, and Dona Ascension had ancestors who were among the original inhabitants of the mission that the Spanish built there. And she became a famous healer, and before she died in 1930, Ascension spent the last months of her life telling her life stories about her people to a man from the Smithsonian. He was their foremost ethnologist, John Harrington. And Charlotte Muse was so impressed by these stories of Ascension that she wrote poems about this woman and what stories she had to tell. And this one is called Half-Breed. It's from her chapbook. And Ascension had been telling about one of the ranchers in the hills had a she-dog, and the coyotes used to come down in the night to visit that she-dog. "And now listen," she said. "When that she-dog gave birth to half-breeds, half-dog, half-coyote, and when Tony was over there herding sheep, they had one of those dogs." That's part of Ascension's story. And this is the poem that Charlotte Muse wrote. Half-breed. You can bend half a coyote to herding sheep, not a whole one. After they trained the half-breed, he was good at his job. The dog half wouldn't harm the sheep. The coyote had an eye out for trickery. He was wild with suspicion, crazy with it, but he kept the sheep in line, dog obedient, coyote watchful, both parts ready to run. There was one who didn't trust fences. The coyote knew nothing of regret, and the dog sang only out of pain, until each half taught the other how to sing. If you ever heard that half-breed at night, you didn't want to leave him alone with the moon. I really like that. Thanks, Charlotte. Hope we see you here on the show soon. I thought we'd have a little bit of fun. Somebody sent me on the internet some things at the Washington Post. Every year they collect new sayings that have been made up. They call it. It's the Mensa Invitational, and this is where people take maybe one or two words, change a letter, or put the words together to create a new word that is sometimes pretty funny. For example, if you take the word graffiti and giraffe, you can make giraffiti, which is vandalism spray-painted very high. And how about the word ozone, the ozone layer, and bozo, the name of our favorite clown. It makes bozone the substance surrounding stupid people that stops bright ideas from penetrating. The bozone layer, unfortunately, shows little sign of breaking down in the near future. And we'll do one more. Lymph. That's L-Y-M-P-H, lymph, to walk with a lisp. Okay, that's enough of that. Now, it's time for me to welcome my guest, Derlin Anima. Hi, Derlin.
Hi, and very nice of you to invite me, Linda.
Well, I'm so glad you're here. We've been working on getting us together for a long time, haven't we?
Too long, but both of us have busy schedules.
We certainly do, yeah. Now, Derlin, you're a person of who wears many hats. You've been an educator. You have written many books, including 12 textbooks.
Right.
And you've written young adult biographies for kids.
Right.
And these biographies, they all seem to be of women.
Well, yes. After
no
all, no reason not to.
That's right.
The young adult biographies, and there are three, are all of women adventurers, explorers, that type of thing. And all these women lived in the earlier 1900s. I have to stop and think 21st centuries.
I know.
You're going through this. Yes.
Yeah.
But they did remarkable things, and yet no one had ever heard of them. Mm. So it was a lot of fun writing those biographies.
Yes, I admit I have never heard of Harriet Chalmers Adams.
Right.
Or Louise Arner Boyd. And Inez Mexia,
right.
Yeah,
yes.
So you told me a little bit about them on the phone the other day, but would you tell the people who they were?
Well, I'd love to, of course, and also maybe get a couple of people who are listening interested in these women. Harriet Chalmers Adams was a Stockton native, and very close to us here in Calaveras County, so that she's particularly interesting. You can go down and still actually see some of the places where she grew up. She and her husband, Franklin, went down in 1904 to South America and explored around South America for 2.5 years, 40,000 miles.
Mm.
And then they came back.
Goodness.
Instead of coming back to California, they ended up in New York. And then he went down to Washington to work for the OAS. Mm-hmm. And she decided that she'd go in and talk to National Geographic, and she became the foremost lecturer for National Geographic during the early 1900s.
What a fascinating woman. My goodness.
Oh, very, very fascinating.
How wonderful.
Love the writing.
Now, that book that, about her, is that still available?
That's still available. It's available on Amazon.com.
Great.
Harriet Chalmers Adams, Adventurer and Explorer.
Okay. Well, if people have a young female child in the family who would like to be inspired by someone like this, they might want to get that book.
Well, also, I notice a lot of adults buy my books, too. So.
And maybe even some boys read them, I suppose.
I hope so.
I hope so, too.
Right.
Okay, what about Inez Mexia?
Inez Mexia was fascinating. She was born in Washington, D.C., lived in Texas. Her father and mother divorced, and then she went back to Mexico and grew up there. Had a very troubled teen, young adult life. Did marry. One husband divorced or died, and the next husband was there, but not really. She became actually mentally ill and came up to San Francisco to a psychiatrist in that city. Now, this is in the 1920s, and discovered herself, and it was a wonderful thing. Joined the Sierra Club, saved the Redwoods League, and then went back to Cal Berkeley at 50 years old. And at that point, became interested in botany, so interested that she became a botanical collector in her early 50s, and then proceeded to tromp the jungles of Mexico and South America with only her native guide. But to this day, you talk to any botanist, and he'll know who Inez Mexia was.
Isn't that wonderful? How inspiring that a woman could live the first 50 years of her life and not know what her destiny was.
Wasn't it wonderful that she did discover it?
Yes.
So we never know, anybody out there, you never know when your destiny is going to appear.
That's the truth. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. This is Linda Field, and today we're talking with Derlin Anima. And Derlin, we were talking about the chapbook, the young adult novels that you wrote for teens, for teenagers, that you said that a lot of adults like to read.
Right.
Because you've chosen some pretty interesting women. And also, I noticed in your something I was reading about you that you you love to read about all kinds of strong women, and especially you were interested, at least in one point of in your life, about reading about women aviators.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Well, also Calaveras County, the Calaveras County Historical Society.
Uh-huh.
I did a whole publication on the female aviators in Calaveras County, and it was just fascinating.
Really?
Carol Kennedy went and interviewed her when she was still alive, and several of the other aviators that were living in our county at that point. And it was just fascinating to see that they had settled there. They had flown planes during World War II, and they had a records. I'm trying to say this correctly, but anyway. As aviators, they had actually had some records broken, and you had no idea. Calaveras County, this little county sitting in the middle of California, and here were these women. And so, yes, that was a fascinating subject.
Yes, and you know, I have a friend named Barbara Kennedy in Sacramento, and she was one of the women who flew in World War II.
Oh,
she
was
carried
she
the planes
really?
And everything, and I always thought I'd like to interview her and do a story, and I never did. Barbara, if you're listening, I still want to get to you.
I was Linda's going to do it one of these days, right?
Yeah. Yeah, my list is too long, darn it. I was going to ask, did you ever read Beryl Markham or Isaac Dinesen?
I've read them, but I was going to say not.
See, West with the Night was by Beryl Markham, and Isaac Dinesen wrote Out of Africa.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, well, of course.
Yeah.
I just, but.
Yeah, I didn't mean to put you on the spot like
no,
that.
No, that's all right. But when I was growing up, for instance, we have Jackie Cochran was quite prominent in the Coachella Valley, where I kind of winter once in a while. And I remember reading about her, reading about all the female aviators. Now, this is back in the 40s, early 50s. Actually, it was in all of the 40s when I went through my aviator phase. But I was fascinated to see how much women were doing. You know, you hear and hear about Amelia Earhart, but there were so many more of them who did some remarkable things. By the way, met a woman when I was on, I traveled to Guatemala in October, and she was the 11th woman to be accepted as a pilot in the U.S. Air Force. And what a fascinating story she had. So, yes, aviation is always been interesting, but I never did it.
I did a little bit, and I really wanted
That's right,
to be,
you did.
I wanted to be a pilot, and I did fly a small plane for a while. But I gave it up because I didn't have enough imagination to realize that I could have gone on with it. So when I started work with American Airlines back in 1971, guess who started the same year I did?
Oh, one of the female pilots?
Yes, Bonnie, what was her last name? Anyway, she was American's first female pilot.
Really?
And we started within 2 months of each other.
Right.
Anyway, I hope she's still doing well today. We better get to talking about your main book, the main reason that we're together today. I mean, you've done so many fabulously interesting things, but Hey Mom and Dad, Remember Me is the book that you published in 2009.
No, 2011.
Oh, 2011?
Yes.
Oh, okay, my information was wrong. I got
came out in July of 2011.
Oh,
yes.
Okay. Well, then it's more up to date. I was reading an interview that someone else did with you, and that's what was
That's true. That's true. It took a while. It was in the making back in 2009, and it took the publisher a while to do it. And just
it
one
always?
Thing. Oh, publishing business is fascinating, and you have to be patient, very patient with it.
Funny you should say that. Yes, Monica Rose and I were just talking today about our wine, cheese, and chocolate book that will be coming out sometime
yes.
in the future.
Yeah, right.
That's about all we can say. Especially in this economy. It is so difficult to put a book together because we're getting sponsors for the book
okay,
as well.
Okay.
And in this economy, there's not the money for that. You know,
well,
so it's a little tough.
In this case, it was kind of an interesting thing because the publisher who had suggested the topic to me in the first place suddenly had a boyfriend who was killed in an airplane crash, as a matter of fact. And just the whole thing, she's a small independent publisher, but we had to wait a couple of months for her to get over the tragedy that happened to her. So it was it's been an interesting process.
That's right. And life does interject itself into the publishing process.
Yes, it does.
Especially when the publishing team is only four women basically, and they are all doing it on a volunteer basis.
Right.
They,
that's even harder than my publisher.
Anyway, so Hey Mom and Dad, Remember Me. She was the one who gave you the idea that this was a topic that needed to be addressed, and she knew that you were the one to do it.
Well, it actually becomes a little more complicated than that. This is National Writers Press, which is a royalty press. Now, National Writers Press at one time was not, but it had turned into a royalty press probably about 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And what had happened is I had won a first place from the National Writers Association on a nonfiction book on looking at custody, and especially custody where the child goes from one parent to the next every week or every other week, and it was a subject that they liked, but they never could quite find someone who was interested in full publishing of that. Meanwhile, Anita, who is publisher for me, noticed that so many of her friends in their 20s and 30s had come from divorced families and were totally dysfunctional adults. They'd never gotten over the divorce. So that, coupled with the fact that my parents were divorced when I was 14, coupled with the children and adults that I saw was seeing as a family counselor, came to all to fruition, and that's when Anita said, "How about doing the book?" And one of the interesting things about this, Linda, is I said, "Fine," and thought I knew everything about divorce, which I learned a lot when I was writing the book, as you always do.
Mm-hmm.
The title came in the middle of the night. I was thinking, now, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? How can I get teenagers interested in this? And then boom, it happened, and I did get out of bed and put it down because I was afraid I was going to lose it in the morning. Oh. But anyway, that's how I got "Hey, Mom and Dad, Remember Me."
It's a great title. It's a great title.
And the whole thing here, Linda, is that parents get so involved with their own emotions and with what is happening to them that just too often they forget about what is happening to their children. And the reason I specifically am targeting tweens and teens is because, here again, families think, oh, those poor little kids, they're the ones that are really going to be hurt by the divorce, but not anywhere as much as the tweens and teens. In fact, one of the stats I found, and I have a book, by the way, that's now going to be accepted and will be published for families of abused children.
Yeah.
And what one of the stats that I found was that a third of teens and tweens who experience a divorce of their parents become dysfunctional adults.
Mm.
And everywhere from, you know, the substance abuse and several marriages to just being totally depressed or not being able to keep jobs or anything else. And I interviewed not only teens and tweens, but of course adults who had gone through divorces and found out some interesting things that you would never expect.
Oh, I bet you did. Now you say teens and tweens. What age group is it? Is a tween maybe from 8 to 13?
Hard to say right now because our definitions are kind of changing. I've always thought of a tween as, say, 10, 11, 12. But I've had children come in at particularly like 9. 9 seems to be an interesting age now for children. It used to be a children's age, but I don't know that anything is a children's age anymore. The tween is definitely the 10, 11, 12. In fact, I had one of my first and she's been around in my life forever. I think it's 10 years. I think she's finally becoming functional. But anyway, she came in at 10.
Uh-huh.
And the one big question she kept asking, and it's the one I discovered is the most, is the divorce my fault?
That's right, because children are self-oriented. They are the center of their universes, and they think that everything is because of them.
Exactly. And I think parents have to be very aware that if they say anything to their children about their grades, their social status, their friends, anything at all, or hear their parents arguing about those things, mm-hmm. and then the parents say, you know, they're getting a divorce, immediately the child thinks, oh, you know, if I'd gotten better grades,
done better in school, they wouldn't be separating.
Oh. There's a movie out, it's called The Last Song, Miley Cyrus, and one of the things she and her brother go to see their dad, and you find out later why they're there. Mom and dad are divorced, and the little boy, her brother, says to the dad, "Well, Dad, was it my fault?" And so it's still staying with that child, even though it's been 2 or 3 years since parents have been divorced. So very much, and I tackle that question right away, and I talk about it throughout. Never think that you are the reason your parents are getting a divorce. There's many, many other reasons why.
Yeah, that's a very hard concept for children to accept and understand, I suppose. And as you say, the teens and the tweens are so different from the little smaller children in the family, because those older children are able to, they overhear conversations, they overhear arguments, they see notes left on the table, they notice when Dad doesn't come home when he should, they notice all these things that the babies don't have any awareness of.
In fact, the other thing, and this is, of course, this book is aimed obviously at the tween and teen,
mm-hmm.
but it's so important that parents and the rest of the family, not just the parents, but grandma and grandpa and maybe aunts and uncles,
mm-hmm.
Need to read this too, to be aware of the fact that tweens and teens are going through so much anyway, physically, emotionally, they're changing, and so on top of all of the things they just cope with at that age, then to have the divorce and see their family break apart is very, very hard for a lot of them, unless they are already seeing, for varying reasons, that their parents might do this. Maybe that, yes, as you say, Dad isn't coming home as much, or there's maybe some domestic violence, or there's some substance abuse, or and maybe then they can understand it a little more. But if you've had just my parents, all of a sudden one day when I was 14, they said they were getting a divorce, and it was like, okay. It was a little different in my day, because Mom got automatic custody of me. Dad was able to see me anytime he wanted, so that was good. I write in the book later about the financial part, because he evidently didn't have much, or he was giving my mother a lot of money or something, but he actually moved into his mother's house, and every time I would go to stay all night, I had to stay with my grandmother in her room because there wasn't much room in that house. And it was I think back, and there were a lot of unusual things that happened to me. The one good thing about my parents' divorce was if there was a party or something big, like my 16th birthday, they took a boyfriend of mine and myself out to dinner, and they did it together. So there were things they did together as well.
And that's really important.
And that's very, very important.
Yeah.
And
we're talking with Derlin Anima about her book, Hey Mom and Dad, Remember Me, on the subject of divorce. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. We're talking with Derlin Anima about her book, Hey Mom and Dad, Remember Me, about children going through divorce. Derlin, how did you decide to structure this book for kids?
Well, for one thing, I felt at the end, I just want to talk about this a minute.
Okay.
When I got all through, I felt that the most important thing was to have a teen read it, and did it resonate with them, or did they think that maybe I needed to do something else? So I had these happened to be ex-clients of mine, but anyway, I had these young ladies read the book and ended up with two just great forewords from both of them, and those are the forewords in the book. But how I structured it, well, I started out at the very beginning with a tween-teen open letter to divorcing parents, and I'll just read a couple of sentences in here. Dear Dad and Mom, I still can't get over the shock about you divorcing. It just doesn't make sense. Oh, I've seen you fight. I remember when one of you left the house in anger, but I can't believe I'm about to be involved in a divorce. And then, of course, it goes on with, please remember me. I want to still have both of you. What is this going to do to our family? And especially, by the way, a teen or tween also worries about if they have younger siblings. What is it going to do to my younger brother or sister? And,
yeah.
And that's very, very traumatic for them. One of the ways that I structured was each chapter starts out with a little vignette about, say, a teen, what is happening to them, how are they going to get through it, can we talk, who are these people that you're dating, you know, mom and dad. In fact, that particular one, I just took myself because I remembered a very interesting incident that happened to me when my dad was dating, and I was so naive. I had no clue. And ended up, we were going to the car races, and he said, oh, this is really going to be neat for you because she has a daughter, and and the daughter's in your class. Well, I was kind of a snobby teenager at that point. Sure, the daughter was in my class, but she was an entirely different social group than I was.
Uh-oh.
And I think, you know, if I thought I had a problem, I was thinking, how in the world did that girl think, you know, how did she feel? And I think I had enough empathy, at least, to understand that she hated this idea as much as I did. So, and we ended up with being all right. But the way I structured is, and one of the big things that I talked about, is if at all possible, can mom and dad sit down together with the teen or tween and talk to them. Now, this isn't always possible, but it's kind of the groundwork for mom and dad, can you stay friends? And then mm-hmm. I go through, I talk about custody and support money and visitations. And one of the big things, by the way, that these young people also hold out as this beautiful dream is, oh, maybe mom and dad will reconcile.
Maybe they'll get back together. I would think that that would be one of the biggest dreams for kids going through this.
It's very much a big dream. This young lady that I talked about who was 10, she went on probably for 3 years saying, oh, my mom and dad, I know they're going to reconcile. And she started praying. Now, this wasn't actually very good because then when mom decided to remarry, this presented a problem because then this young lady came in one day and she said to me, well, there just isn't any God because he didn't answer my prayers. And
oh,
I said, now, wait. There's other reasons here. And I had to go through another 6 months to a year getting her through that part. Mm. But anyway, definitely the reconciliation. And then can you be friends? And I talk about that a lot with the teenager asking their parents that. And then also, who are your new friends, mom and dad? And I go through all of the dating and what to expect. And with girls on... Actually, boys could probably maybe have this happen too, but definitely girls. Is the man dating mom, or is he interested in the child?
Uh-oh.
Yeah. And it's really an uh-oh. And I looked back and remembered that I'd had the incident happen. I was so naive, I didn't realize it. But, yeah, obviously that guy wasn't interested in my mother. And the only thing I said to mom when I finally got home, I'd gone to the beach with this idiot.
Wait a minute. He wasn't interested in your mother.
No, he wasn't.
He was
interested
in
me.
Oh, my gosh.
I had no idea. And I mean, years later I realized what happened. But he acted like such an idiot. He pretended he was a teenager, and this guy must have been in his 40s or 50s.
Oh, yeah.
And at that point, I just came home and said to my mother, you know, he is a real jerk. Please don't date him anymore. And at least my mom, and she listened. Yeah.
Good.
My mother was really good about listening to me. When she did remarry, she had a very, very, very nice gentleman. I mean, he was just very, very sweet. My dad went through a few. There was one marriage where she was about 5 years older than me. That was exciting.
Oh my goodness.
Then the next one, well, anyway. Led him in such a chase that he died early. But anyway.
What about the idea that that it would be better if a couple divorces and they have children, it would be the best thing for the children if the parents did not date at all until those kids were up and out of the house?
Well, you know,
I know that sounds like a dream.
No, I know it sounds like a dream, Linda, but I know I watched some when my children were growing up. I watched the woman across the street from me had a husband who died. He didn't. It wasn't a divorce, but he died, and I think she started to go out on a couple of dates. Her son was probably 10 or 11 when this happened, and I guess he rebelled and said, "I don't want you to," and she just flat out said, "Fine, that's it." And it would be a wonderful thing. Unfortunately, I'm afraid that there's a need on the part of the parents, and they're not looking at the needs of the children. And then once in a while, I did run into a wonderful story about a couple where both the man and the woman had been divorced, did start to date, but were very involved with their children. And what they did, and which made this kind of a very, very nice situation, is most of the time they would try to plan picnics or family gatherings, both for his family and her family.
Mm-hmm.
And this worked out quite well. The children got to know each other, and it was pretty good. But the other problem there is if there's a remarriage and there are children involved on both sides, then there's jealousy, there's everything else that goes on, and
I'm sure
just too hard.
So many problems. And what about divorced parents who date and involve their children in the other person's life, especially if that other person has children, and the kids have already gone through a loss. They've lost the union of their parents. Now they have to have divided loyalties because their mother lives with them probably, and their father they go visit. And then they've got to get to know the boyfriends and girlfriends of their parents, and then maybe also even the children, and it becomes such a big, complicated life. And then what if the parent, they get to like the
new one. I know where you're going.
And his children, they get to like this person and maybe feel safe that, okay, well, I lost my dad, but I kind of like these people too, and I'm gonna learn to like them really well. And then the mother breaks up with that guy.
I knew where you were going because
it's another loss for the kids.
No, this is another loss for the children. And in fact, here again, my poster child is the young lady that her dad was really good about this, by the way. Mom remarries, dad does not. Dad is concerned about his daughter and waits a long time. Finally, found somebody and was kind of dating her, and daughter decided that this was a pretty great woman, and then something happened between dad and this woman, and yes, then the girl went through another breakup, and the implications of this can just become tragic for everyone.
It's hard enough for adults to go through breakups, but kids are learning to build, they're building their emotional psyche.
Right.
And they're building
right.
their emotional lives. And if they put their trust and they give their affection to someone and they lose that person, and it happens multiple times, don't they begin to shut down emotionally?
Oh, they definitely shut down emotionally. They're shutting down emotionally anyway. The other thing that we need to talk about, of course, is mom and dad not saying, as the child is visiting with one or the other, now how are they doing? Now, how is your mom doing? Or how is your dad doing? What's going on? Making the child, or you have to take a message that I need more money, for instance, mom saying to the child about for dad. And putting the child in the middle is just a horrendous thing. I didn't even realize that I was a dysfunctional adult, so to speak. Raised a family. My first husband died when I was 50. And I had a friend who finally said, you know, he said, it would be really nice if you would go to a counselor. And I said, you're kidding. And then I thought, oh, well, my medical insurance pays for it. I will. And when I did, the counselor talked to me first time, and she said, well, you know what's wrong with you is your parents' divorce back when you were 14. And I went, what? And then I realized how much I had shut down the things I would hear, mostly from my mother, not my father, about her. He didn't say too much, but my mother used to say quite a bit. And all of a sudden I thought, oh my goodness, all those things had just washed over me over the years.
So your mother would tell you about your father. Would she tell you about her relationship with your father?
Not so much the relationship as, look what he's doing, look who he's with, he's not giving me enough money, those types of things. And making
it the child's problem.
Yeah. Oh, definitely, yeah. Making my problem. Yes. Yeah. And I didn't realize until years later how much she was trying to make it my problem. And in fact, I'm from San Diego, and I ended up in my senior year going with my mother and stepfather to the Bay Area. So, and then my dad thought I deserted him, and then I had that problem on my hands. And
your father felt that you deserted him, and he laid a guilt trip on you.
And he said,
oh my, how wonderful.
Yeah, because I, you know, elected to do this. And so all in all, yes, I was just totally confused about it all. And that's typical. I ran into one man, he's in his 40s now, and when he started writing about what had happened to him, and he hated his stepfather, who I think kind of broke up the marriage in the first place. Mm. But his dad was a real philanderer, too, and had many, many girlfriends, et cetera. Okay. And I could not believe the hatred that he had developed. But there is a good side to this. He has three children. He has a wonderful marriage. And just like, my first husband came from a divorced family also. And we said, you know what the stats are? We're never going to get a divorce. And we didn't, of course.
Because you knew the stats were the opposite.
The stats are totally the opposite.
Divorce,
yeah, yeah,
yeah.
I mean, well, actually, both of us had grandparents. We had grandparents.
Two generations of
divorces.
Back then, wow, that was rare back then.
It was very rare.
Yeah.
We made that decision and stuck by it. So it was very interesting. In fact, I don't think there was ever a time when we would have considered divorce, because to us, if you have a problem, you put it out on the table and you talk about it. And,
you know, it's as simple as that sometimes. Too bad more people don't do that. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Manzanita Voices. We're talking with Derlina Nima about children and divorce and the book that she has written to try to help kids through it. It's called Hey Mom and Dad, Remember Me? And that, boy, oh boy, is that the case. Because people, divorce is a horribly painful thing to go through, and the adults can get so wrapped up in their own pain and their own psyches
angst.
And their own angst, yeah, that they forget that the kids are going through this too, and the kids don't have, they're not mature yet. They're still building their brains and their emotions, and they need security. They need to know that they are safe, that they are loved, and that this isn't their fault.
Very good, Linda. And as you're talking, I'm also thinking to myself, yes, I was an only child, and I had led a pretty pampered life, and all of a sudden I was thrown into, mom went to work, and I was cooking, such as it was, dinner. But I also, as you're talking, I think that sometimes children almost feel like, or teens particularly, like they end up being the parent, and that's a very, very sad thing. I do want to mention that I go through this entire you know, how to cope with all of those different events in your life as the divorce is progressing. And then I end up with chapter 9, in which I say, thinking about yourself and your future, because that is so important. And I want to, I had talked about the little vignettes that I would start at the chapter, and this particular one is kind of interesting. A male in his late teens learned how much he could survive and adapt when he was applying to college. His parents had divorced when he was in his early teens. He was sure it was one of the most devastating things ever to happen to him. During this time, he learned responsibility, as I did too, and how to adapt to the different living styles of both parents. When he didn't get into the university of his first choice, he was devastated, wondering why it happened and what he'd do now. While still devastated, he went ahead and took his second choice. This second choice gave him a scholarship, which never could have happened on the first university. A professor even called him personally to welcome him.
Nice.
He not only discovered he loved his second choice, but his decision to go on with his life instead of wallowing in disappointment, and that made his future bright. His experience with his parents' divorce taught him responsibility and adaptation for later life. Because he was able to look at how he was beginning to adapt to what had happened with his parents' divorce, and now he was ready to go on with his own life and to accept disappointment, because, of course, that was the major disappointment in his life to begin with.
Sure.
So then the chapter goes on, and the very first part of it, too often, unfortunately, teens and tweens respond only negative to the divorce. And they can take two paths. They may feel like they can never trust anyone again.
Mm-hmm.
And that whole trust issue we haven't even talked about, but that's a major one when it comes to the divorce of their parents.
Oh, sure.
Well, they loved me. Do they really still love me? Or they will vow never to allow anyone else to go through this intense pain, becoming the great helper of everyone with a problem.
Oh.
And that, by the way, also happened, this young lady was really a poster child, but that was also, at one point she was having some trouble in school and her father had called and I talked to the principal and the principal said, well, she's the drama queen of the campus. And she was. She was trying to fix everybody else's problems. She had a problem. Hers wasn't really fixed, but she was determined that everybody else was going to get
dear.
A fix. It was really interesting to watch that. But, instead of those types of responses, I show the teens how to kind of talk about what's happening to them, to tell their parents, okay, maybe they aren't getting both parents together, but to tell each parent that they have to help the child through the divorce. That the parents have to be available to them, that they have to keep their promises. I mean, maybe, you know, oh, Dad says, yes, I'll be there at such and such a time, and then he doesn't come.
Mm-hmm.
Emphasize that these are some of the positive things that parents need to do with their children. Expect consistency and discipline in routines, and there's a big one.
Consistency and discipline in routines.
And, yes, and in discipline, because, and I've run into this again and again, both parents... neither parent really has the same type of disciplinary role.
Mm-hmm.
The young lady that wrote the first foreword came from now she was actually a child, a very young child when her parents first divorced, and then she ended up with her mother going through a second divorce.
Oh,
but on her father's side, there was a lot of stability. They were good Christian people. This young lady, and I finally laughed one day, and I said, you're two different people, aren't you? She would go 2 weeks to mom's and then 2 weeks to dad's.
Oh,
fortunately, they lived in the same town. But mom was kind of lax, let her kind of do what she wanted to do. If she wanted to have a boyfriend over, the boyfriend came over and all that kind of thing. Dad was and stepmom were strict. They really wanted to know what she was doing. And so she did say to me, she said, I've learned to put on two personalities.
Wow.
And that...
That's really good
again.
For your mental health.
Yes, yes, you noticed that too, Linda. Oh, yes, and the stepmother, who was just a fabulous lady, I really, really enjoyed her. But she just hardly could cope with this because she could see what this girl was doing, and she so wanted her this girl. She really loved her so much that she wanted this girl to really be growing up with them and with the Christian home, and knew what was happening with Mom, who, by the way, her mother was actually a delightful person, just a little freer than the than Dad and Stepmom. So it was kind of a very interesting consistency problem. And that is kind of scary because, yeah, children of divorce can become two people.
And become way too adaptable.
They
don't know who they are.
They don't have
themselves.
Any idea who they are.
Yeah.
And if they're and as they go into a marriage, what is really going to happen?
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Yeah, and it's really true.
And so it goes on.
Mm-hmm. And there it goes on. And but I talk a lot about taking care of yourself and say.
Yeah, what are things that kids can do to take care of themselves, even in the most horrendous divorce situation?
In the most, well, I have a little checklist at the end.
Good.
And I thought I have checklists at the end of each chapter, by the way.
Well, that sounds really handy. Hey, before we forget, if we don't want to run out of time without reminding people that they can get this book, Hey Mom and Dad, Remember Me, on Amazon.com.
Right. And it's both regular print edition and it's also on Kindle.
Oh, okay, great.
So you can just, you know, put it on your Kindle and there it is.
Take it with you wherever you go.
Yes. I also have a website.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that.
Derlin.com, www.derlin.com.
And your name is spelled with two N's?
Two N's, D-U-R-L-Y-N-N.
.com.
Yeah, and it's all in lowercase.
Oh, good, okay.
And then, yeah, I am, oh, this is a good one, Linda. I am on Facebook.
Oh, boy.
Yes. And, you know, that's, what is it, Derlin dot, I don't know, com at Facebook, I don't know, it's something to do with Facebook, but anyway, it's really fascinating because I sometimes get into Facebook and sometimes I don't. I've had several colleges that I did attend a few colleges, and they have reviewed my book, and then I've had students, I taught at ULP, and I now have students, you know, sending me these messages on Facebook about how they'd seen my book and they've gone to get it. And I'm going, great. Now, how do I answer all
these
things?
Yes, how do you answer? And I answer people. I reply to people and never hear a word back from them.
Exactly.
And that's so disappointing. And so then I, at Christmas time and my birthday time, which is they come pretty close together, I heard from some relatives I hadn't heard from for a long time. But it's easy to send an automatic happy birthday greeting on Facebook. I answered every one of them. And then I said, please, here's my email address. Send me a personal email and let's talk, you know.
Never heard from them. No. I got the same birthday messages.
Oh.
All kinds of birthday messages.
It's so
in
disappointing.
December, but yes, nothing else. But I will eventually be doing a blog so that I can have kind of an interchange of ideas from parents and teens and tweens. I would really love to do this because I think it's very important that just they have ideas, and those ideas will help others, and maybe they'll get some ideas from me because it's important to know that, yes, this is a really terrific trauma in your life, but that does not mean that you have to let it define your life. And when I had my reviews later came from a social worker who said, oh, every parent should read this book because then they'll know what not to do with their children. Of course, I had a teen reviewing it, and I had a parent educator from the Women's Center in San Joaquin County review it, and that's when she said, it is so good to let teens know, don't let this trauma ever define your life. You can rise above it and you can do special things. And that's what the checklist is all about, is you are special. And
so
don't
tell
let
me
your parents
some of the
do
things
that.
In that checklist.
Okay. Examine how you're reacting to the divorce and the negative things you might do. Negative things, of course, being maybe substance abuse, cutting, any number of other things. Two, talk to your parents about your feelings, your anger, your depression, your aloneness.
What if they can't talk to their parents?
Then, and I'm glad you said that, Linda, there is usually, if they think back on it, and every one of us think back on it too, there's probably a pretty good teacher, or maybe a good parent. Now, here, of a friend that maybe they can go to instead. I remember when I was teaching that I had more than one student that kind of confided in me because they couldn't confide in anyone else. Maybe they knew I was a mom, and that helped too. I don't know. But that confiding in someone else, or, and I think this is very important for parents to think about, is if you notice a change in your child, getting that child to a counselor, letting that child talk to a third party who is maybe neutral about this whole, the counselor is neutral. I didn't know either parents of a lot of the children that I talked to. In fact, I'm seeing one this evening, and that's very good, because the child then takes them maybe a couple of times. They're not going to open up right away. They're going to see if they can trust me. But they will open up, and it's very, very important. One of the unfortunate things is maybe a child is very close to a grandparent. But the problem is, remember, that grandparent is the parent of one of the child's parents, either the father or the mother. And much as that grandparent maybe wouldn't want to, they are going to take sides. And it's the same with aunts and uncles. You have to be a very dispassionate person to be able to rise above taking sides in a divorce. But definitely children need, if they can't talk to their parents, they need to talk to someone. And I can't say it enough. If you can't afford counseling, there are places available for that child, and I would call the school. The school has school counselors who can suggest where to take the child or what to do. Or the school counselor might kind of go, "Oh, is that what's wrong with the child?" Because maybe the grades are slipping.
And yes, it's bound to have some things that show up in the school life.
Oh, it does. Yeah. It does. Yes.
Yeah. Well, Derlin, I wish we had more time, but we have run through. Unfortunately, we could talk for another hour on this subject.
Right.
Well, I suggest to the listeners that you go and look for Derlin's book. If you have any family members or you know of anyone who's going through a divorce and they have children, this would be a book that, you know, just get that book for them and hand it to them, and you'll probably be doing them a big favor.
Thank you, Linda. Thank you for having me.
It's been so nice having you with us. So I hope you come back and talk with us again sometime soon,
Derlin. I'd love to. About some of those other books.
That's right. We didn't even get to those. Okay. Well, everyone, thank you for joining me this week with Manzanita Voices. Don't forget to go to my website, manzamedia.com, to see archive shows and my blog and some other interesting things. At least I hope they're interesting. Let me know what you think. You can email me at linda@manzamedia.com. See you next week.
You've been listening to Manzanita Voices, a production of the Manzanita Writers Press, an affiliate of the Calaveras County Arts Council.